You people are horrible.
Welcome to our podcast, Heist and Slice, a true crime podcast where we talk about a heist one week and a slice the next. I'm Nora.
And I'm Shelby.
And we have a guest.
I'm Ashton.
So today is a heist. It's our 13th episode and on Friday the 13th.
Whoa. Friday the 13th.
Okay.
Witches.
So this is a good one. It's not really a heist, but he's kind of like the person that fit his narrative to fit what was going on around him.
Okay.
Like a chameleon.
A chameleon.
Yes. And he was also in some major historic events as well.
You know? Do you know who Boy George is?
No.
He sings Karma Chameleon.
Karma.
Ashton. He had a chair that was made of dicks.
What?
Like it was a wooden chair that had dicks.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. You should look it up.
So it wasn't like made of dicks.
No, it wasn't made of dicks. It was made like to dicks. Look like dicks.
Oh, okay. There's okay. A difference yeah. There.
I was like about Sorry. To live out my Game of Thrones fantasy.
Right oh, there. With a dick chair.
All right. So today, we're going to talk about Fitz Duquesne. He was named Frederick, but he went by Fitz.
We have all Fitz, kinds of people Fritz, that have good Fritz, good
Fritz,
names.
Fritz.
How do you spell that?
F-R-I-T-Z.
Fritz.
Bitch. Bitch.
So he was born September 21st, 1877, in Cape Colony, a South African British colony. He was born to a Boer family of French
origin. Oh, no.
What? No. What was that word? Go back to Huckwanat? What are you saying here? Just skip that word.
In Cape Colony. And they moved to a different part of South African Republic to start a farm with his father and his father's brother, so his uncle. And his father made a living as a hunter and traveled a lot and to sell skins, tusks, and horns. He had two younger siblings. And Fitz became a hunter like his father. And he kind of... Fitz gave himself the nickname Black Panther, so aww, he's one of those people.
Okay.
It became his totem, and he mimicked the Panther's hunting skills.
Please tell me he crawled on all fours.
There's a lot of stuff that hasn't been confirmed, but apparently, according to Fitz, at the age of 12, his mother was attacked by a man, and Fitz took a sword and stabbed the man in the stomach, killing him. And also at the age of 12, now this is according to Fritz, a war party forced the family and six other settlers to retreat to a river. They had a long battle, and Fritz shot and killed several people.
This is a slice.
What?
Now this is also going on the same time as the first Boer-Anglo War. So the Dutch moved to South Africa and claimed a colony, and then they were fighting with the South Africans there, and then British was coming in, went in the colony as well, and so like a big bunch of fighting and stuff going on.
We're getting a history lesson yeah. And the heist tonight.
At age 13, Fritz was sent to school in England. After graduation, Fritz went to Oxford University for a year, then attended academia, military, or war allow, but there's no record of him there. So then we go to age 22 in 1899, the second Anglo-Boer War broke out in South Africa. Now, Fitz returned to South Africa because his father wrote him a letter that said, you need to come home and fight.
Get your ass home. Get your ass home,
Black Panther. But the thing is, that's what he says, but his father was dead like 3 years before this happened. So we don't know who called him home, but he ended up back in South Africa.
He wrote himself and said, come home.
So he ended up back in South Africa. And joined the Boer commanders as a lieutenant. He was wounded with a bullet through his right shoulder at the siege of Ladysmith and promoted to captain.
What? Did you reread that?
He was promoted to a captain.
He was wounded with a bullet through his right shoulder, and then he was promoted to captain.
Well, that's all you have to do to get promoted.
And then Fritz was captured by the British, but escaped. And Fitz became known as the Black Panther. And this is a quote from a British officer. He was one of the craftiest men I ever met. He had something of a genius of the Apache for avoiding a combat except in his own terms. Yet he would be the last man I should choose to meet in a dark room for a finished fight armed only with knives.
Okay, I'm going to ask you this, but I bet you don't know the answer. Is this where Stanley got his idea for the Black Panther?
Stanley.
Oh.
Oh.
Stanley?
I don't know.
No, Stanley, not Stanley.
I don't know.
Yeah. For that movie?
I wonder.
I don't.
Great movie.
No,
there's a comic.
Guy, okay, so this guy.
Well, yeah, true.
This guy's not someone, once you get into his history, he's not someone you're going to want to admire.
Oh.
Like, he was a very charismatic person, and he knew a lot of languages, and was very smart, and just was able to, like, fit his needs, but he does a lot of things.
Well, I mean, at age 12, he was already killing a whole bunch of people, so.
I highly doubt it. Now, crack on a cracker.
What is happening here?
I can't read my handwriting.
That word is next.
It's usual.
Oh.
Next?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Next to there on.
Oh, this is. Okay. This was. Yeah, don't look at my notes.
Okay, sorry.
This was by Frederick Russell Burnham, chief of scouts from the British Army, who was also tasked to kill Fitz at one point, and then they come back later on in their history. So we'll get back to this dude.
Okay.
Between May 29th and June 4th, 1990, 150 million pounds of gold was removed from South Africa. So, in Cape Cod, the British came, took over that area that they were in. So, all this Boer settlers moved up and got these other territories. And Britain was like, I will leave you alone. Well, then those other territories found gold. So, Britain's like, mine. Fuck that! Mine! And so, they try to take it. So, then they gather up all this gold. And they're going to send it to the Netherlands to President Paul Kruger, and other Boers that were fleeing in exile. Somehow, Fitz was in command of one of the large shipments of gold, moved by a wagon. Along the way, the group gets wounded by the British, and then Fitz meets a native tribe there. And so Fitz gives the native tribe all of his oxen except one. They go and bury the goat, and then Fitz leaves and has the tribe kill all of the men with him. So that
Holy.
Fitz
so
is the
fucker.
Only one that knows where the gold is hidden.
See, 12 years old, now, start killing people. You get older, you're just going to keep killing them.
Now, no one knows if this is true. There is a legend. It's called Krieger's Millions, the gold.
Huh.
But... Yeah, no one knows. And by how much gold that they allegedly hid, it would be $500 million today.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Are we going to go search for this? Or
not in South Africa.
Oh. Right, because listen, mosquitoes like me, and I would catch the malaria and die.
Yeah.
Good old malaria.
Good old
Let's
malaria.
Go get some
After
malaria.
This, Fitz joins the Boer forces again and was captured by the Portuguese and sent to an internment camp. And while there at this internment camp, he wrote letters saying how he was mistreated and how they should treat him better and how the guards calling him names doesn't help. He just wrote all these letters to his captors, be like, you need to treat me better. Yo, you treat me like shit.
Somebody was a crybaby.
Jeez.
And apparently while there, he charmed one of the daughters of the guards and she helped him escape to Paris.
Ooh,
and
la-la.
He eventually made his way to England. Well, he infiltrated the British Army and was posted to wartime South Africa in 1901 as an officer at age 24.
This just sounds like a movie.
He fought against the British in the Boer War. So, remember, they were fighting the British. So, now he's infiltrated the British. So, then he gets sent back to the South Africa and part of the wars. But he's a British officer. And when he's there, he learns that his parents' farm was burned down. His sister was raped and killed, and his mother was dying in a British concentration camp with a 7-month-old baby.
Sweet Jesus.
And
he loses his fucking mind and goes crazy, don't he? And just kills everybody. Yes.
So,
again, for the third time in his life.
I'm invested now.
Everything was burned down because Hubert Kitchener gave orders to scorch earth policy that they was going to burn everything there so that they couldn't have anything to use for war. Like, they couldn't have land to grow crops or anything like that, so they was going to burn everything down. So that's what happened to his farm. And his uncle, who was also living there, was hung and, what's it called when you take, like, their body parts off?
Dismembered?
Yes.
When you take your body parts off, what's that called? Decapitation?
It's okay. She knew exactly what necrophilia was last time.
I did. I don't know why I knew that. It's gross. But okay, so this really fueled his hatred for Britain, and he pretty much set his whole life to just fuck Britain up. He was like, I'm gonna fuck Britain
to hell with you and your team.
And he became as quote from Clement Wood, a dude who wrote a biography on Brits. Fitz pretty much quoted a walking, living, breathing, searing, killing, destroying torch of hate for Britain.
Wow.
So he really hated Britain.
That's a lot of hate.
That was a lot of words.
He returned to the Cape Town, South Africa, as a British officer with plans. Stop looking at my notes.
It wasn't me this time.
I'm trying to
sabotage. No, no.
Okay,
don't.
Okay.
You get in trouble.
To sabotage British intelligence army, he recruited 20 Boer men, and they were going to bomb the town where the British people was at. One of the Boer men was concerned that his property was also going to get destroyed, so he went and told on him. On October 11th, 1901, he was arrested for conspiracy against the British government. He was sentenced to be executed on October 12th by a firing squad, along with the 19 other men that he recruited.
I'm going to look this guy up. I'm going to look and see what he looks like.
On October 12th, the 20 men he recruited were executed. Fitz took a plea bargain, life in prison, exchanged for him decoding secret Boer codes and translating Boer dispatches that they had. Fitz was kept in the Castle of Good Hope.
He's a white guy.
Yeah.
This whole time, you let me believe he was of a different ethnic background.
He's Dutch. Something like that. Yeah, he's white.
No, he's kind of handsome.
Well, hold on.
Kind of a backstabber.
He looks like a bit of a killer.
So,
just saying.
Also, while he's kept in this Castle of Hope and being forced to translate, he complains that the food isn't good and, like, all that kind of stuff.
He's a whiner.
He just writes these letters complaining. But he also, there was extremely thick walls in there. And so he took a spoon.
Oh, my God.
And eventually dug a tunnel to escape.
This is some Shawshank Redemption kind of stuff.
Oh, it gets better. It gets better.
Okay, tell me
more. He escapes, but as he escapes through the tunnel, a large stone that he didn't take off fell from the top and pinned him in the tunnel.
Oh,
a guard found him the next morning unconscious but uninjured. After several attempts and help from other Boers, Fitz eventually escaped and made his way to Baltimore, Maryland.
Baltimore.
The Second Boer War ended in 1902, but because his family was killed, Fitz never makes it back to South Africa.
Wow.
He instead goes to New York City, and things get a little weird.
Oh, he kills a bunch more people.
Okay. So, he also, one of the people that helped him escape was Anna.
Not Anna.
Alice Wortley.
Damn you, Alice. And Wortley?
Yes.
That poor girl.
And they marry in June 1910 at the age of 33. They get married. Now, while he's in New York, he...
Which is the same time as Holmes.
He takes a couple jobs at newspapers writing about his exploits in Africa.
Okay.
Like game hunting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so other papers are bidding more money for him to come write for them. So he gets in like the circuit.
Okay.
So he just becomes a popular person wherever he's at, basically.
His exploits in Africa and the hunting that he did.
And he was a whiny bitch.
And he even gets the attention of Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh.
The president.
Nice.
Right?
Okay.
Now, Teddy in 1910, Robert Brossard founded a new food supply society because they were low on meat and they needed to bring in a new meat source.
Okay.
They were going to bring it into Louisiana. Now, the guy that was also supposed to kill Fitz, the one that wrote about him, the British officer, is also involved in this. So they go to
Fitz. This is where they meet back.
They go to Fitz and they're like, hey, you've been to Africa. What kind of meat source could we bring to Louisiana and kind of feed everybody with it? So... guess which one Fitz says.
Elephants.
Hippos.
Same thing.
Hippos.
Hey, hippos.
Hey, wait, I thought they killed people.
Hippos will take anything.
It's better. So, Brussels introduces the American Hippo Bill. That will allow $250,000 to bring hippos to Louisiana to farm.
So people ate hippos?
So,
in 1910, apparently.
Hold up! Fitz never tasted hippos, but he said they were really good. Like, he went to court to, like, testify saying,
they're really good. Yeah, they're good.
They're docile creatures.
Docile, my ass.
Nobody's gonna
die. This even got the backing of Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, my
He backed the plan, and so did the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Could you freaking imagine Louisiana being filled with hippos if this went down. We would have hippos running rampant. And we talk
about them heavy
people. Everywhere.
Talking about real hippos. Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Okay. Hippos okay. running rampant everywhere.
Hungry, hungry hippos.
The bill fell short of passing, and the new food organization was disbanded, and Fitz became President Roosevelt's personal instructor to go on hunting trips with him.
Wow.
Now, also, Roosevelt is in office, and so he's talking about wanting to go to Africa after he goes to office. So Fitz starts writing articles about how he doesn't think the president is fit to go to Africa, and like...
What?
Bad talking Roosevelt and all this stuff. But then when the second time for election comes, he starts like...
Backing him.
Yes. Of course, Roosevelt lost. But, yeah, so he got in with the president.
All right.
And then in 1941, nope, I'm dyslexic. 1914, at the age 37, Fitz becomes a German spy.
What the hell? How did he get from Louisiana to Germany?
Hold up, girl.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm jumping ahead.
So, he leaves New York, and he goes to Brazil, and he takes on an alias. Guess what his freaking alias
Give
is?
Me something good.
Wait.
I wish I could.
Hippo Panther.
Oh, no. It's nothing like the people
Black
that we
hippo.
Like.
Black hippo.
What was the guy's name that we
Gray
like?
Gray hippo.
Frederick Fredericks.
What?
The hell? That's like being Richie Rich.
Frederick Fredericks
is his alias.
It could have been something cool. What was that guy that we liked?
Thad?
Hey, something Dorfer.
Orbendorfer.
Orbendorfer.
Yeah.
His cover was doing scientific research on rubber plants, and he was to disrupt the commercial traffic in countries at war with Germany at this time. And while there, Fitz also had another cover where he was a scientist and one where he was an actor. So he would send these cargoes back under these names, Frederick Fredericks. And while they were being sent back, the ship would explode. But he also took out insurance claims on those as well.
There he is, mass killing.
We'll get back to that. So one of his big cargo things, he said, was like $250,000 worth of film and stuff like that. And then it blew up in the Tennessee. Oh, I don't know the name. I didn't write that down. But he also ends up killing three other people, blowing the ship up.
Great.
This is up my alley, huh?
Back to
yeah. He ends up sinking 22 British ships, and one of his bomb kills three British soldiers, which is the one where his cargo was on as well. Soon after, British intelligence discover Fitz's identity, plus the two other aliases, George Fordham and Piet Nakandona.
Oh, gosh. Let me see.
Oh, let's do it again. Nyakud.
Nikud.
Teamwork. And then he fled to Buenos Aires. No, that's not right.
Buenos Aires.
Yes. Argentina. And several weeks later wrote an article reporting his own death.
What?
But Frederick's or his death?
His death.
Okay.
But then he couldn't stand being dead. So a couple weeks later, he writes an article. Frederick saying,
Fitz
Duquesne has been found alive.
Oh, God.
He couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle it.
Could you kill yourself off? Not like really kill yourself off, but like kill yourself off.
Take my death?
Hell yeah. I would. Well,
I couldn't be quiet about it.
Say something now. But yes, I could. Listen, kill myself off, move far away, and the only people know is y'all. My parents, because they would kill me.
They would literally kill me. He's also married at this time. His wife has no idea what he's up to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, she's well, he killed himself off, and his wife so just
they,
like...
Yeah, they were like, is she dead too? No, she was in New York, and she's like, I'm dumbfounded. Still alive.
She's like, I'm still alive, my husband, he won't, so, he's not.
In May 1916, at the age of 39, stop looking at my notes,
Fitz
returned to New York City. He took the insurance policy out as George Foreman and Frederick.
George what? Foreman!
Foreman.
That is a disgrace.
Like the patty man?
Foreman? No!
The Foreman girl.
I can't read my handwriting. And then he had his wife, Alice, try to, get the claims.
Damn you, Alice.
Oh, my gosh.
Alice, no.
What is happening?
The insurance companies refused to pay, and they started an investigation.
No.
In June 1916, he left for Europe, orders from German intelligence. He posted as a Russian Duke Boris. Is that what you're sure?
No.
Another great word. Let's see it. Zakharovsky.
And joined Field Marshal Kitchener on the HMS Hampshire in Scotland. Does Kitchener sound familiar to anybody?
Kitchener?
Kitchener?
Yeah, you remember, I was like, did you just say Hubert?
Kitchener?
Hubert Pubert, that's Shelby's kid's name.
Yeah.
It really is. Ask her about it.
So, while aboard, he signaled the German submarine right before the torpedo hit the ship. Fitz escaped. This has not been confirmed. But
none of his shit's been confirmed because he's a liar.
But Lord Kitchener was killed. And Fitz received the Iron Cross
for
this.
No, Hubert. No.
Yeah, this is the man that had the scorched earth policy and killed, like, his family and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, what is
that? Yes, against the Boers. There's a hole in my pants.
What? Let me see.
Right there.
Damn it, Hubert.
What?
Nora, can you fix it?
We should fix this.
I mean, yeah, but Ashton can sew better than
I
can.
Yeah, I can. I definitely.
Can you fix
my pants?
Yeah, I made your hat, by the way.
Okay. Really?
So.
Where's it at?
We'll have to get back to that. I made Shelby one, too. It's just like
yours. Oh, that's so happy.
So, Fitz. Yay!
Yay!
Fitz goes to Washington, D.C., July 1917.
Yeah, okay, wait a second.
Washington, D.C.
This motherfucker travels all over the place.
Yeah.
Was it easy for people back in the day, people
traveled so much
the hell?
But at this point, he's probably like 85.
Wasn't Blackfoot going around and shit at this
something.
Time? Blackfoot,
he's
what
only
was
like
it called?
30-something?
The plague?
40 or something.
Okay, listen. So he's in Washington. Sorry. He leaves NYC and now he's headed to Washington.
He goes to Washington.
All right, he's in Washington.
Oh.
What happens in Washington, Shelby?
Okay, this stays is after the U.S. declares war on Germany, but I feel like I got my time. Did they declare it in 1917?
The fast Siri. No, let's be honest. Siri, don't know. Let me just look up Google.
World War II? Was it World War One?
We can call it Austin.
I think we're in World War One.
Are we in World War One?
World War II happened in 1939 to 1945.
I know, but where did World War One happen?
Where?
When?
Oh, okay, let's look.
When? I think we're in World War One.
War One.
Were we in? Yeah, we were in World War One.
Y'all say World War One three times
World
fast.
World War One.
Three times fast. 1914 to 1919.
Okay, so yeah, this must be World War One.
Okay. World War One?
Yes.
Or World War One.
Okay.
I can't do it either, so it's okay.
Okay.
Here we are. We're in World War One.
So then he gets in contact with Senator Robert Browser, the dude that wanted to do the hippo farm.
Oh my gosh.
Unaware that he's a spy, Robert tries to get him a position in the army. It didn't work out. And so he wants to get back into the lecturing circuit, but people aren't really fascinated by stories of Africa anymore. And so with the help of the German intelligence, he creates a war hero. Captain Claude Stratton of the Western Australian Light Horse Regiment, which isn't even a real thing.
Okay.
So he's taken on another alias.
Yes.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
According to him, this is the man who's seen more war than any man claimed to have ever seen. He'd been, I know I can pronounce this in my head, but I can't pronounce it out loud.
Bayoneted?
Yeah.
Bayoneted?
Three times, gassed four.
That's like what
struck
the statue
once
is.
With a hook.
Yeah.
Yes. And with this, he was able to get back in the circuit, and he started making good money, being Captain Claude, which...
Captain Claude? How many names is he going to have?
He has over 42 aliases.
Listen,
oh, my... How
I'd have been
awesome
like, let me see
though?
All your battle scars, please, sir.
How cool is that,
okay.
though?
It gets
all
crazier.
Those aliases? How?
So things are going well, and then in 1917, at the age of 40, on November 17th in New York City, Fitz is arrested for insurance fraud.
What?
When he is arrested, they find a large file of clippings related to the bombing of ships and letters from the assistant German vice chancellor, and indicating that Fitz was the one who rendered considerable service to the German, causing the British problems, and also the British was
dumbass.
Looking for him.
You never keep
souvenirs.
So he
kept a bunch of stuff?
Yeah. So we have the U.S. who's gotten him on insurance claim, and we have Britain who wants him back to... for high sea treason, for killing on the high sea.
And then
so the
back.
U.S. is like, okay, well, we're not going to be able to get much with him on the insurance claim, so we're going to extradite him to Britain. So they plan to extradite him to Britain. So now he's technically a British prisoner, but he's on U.S. soil. So Fitz doesn't want to go to Britain because the
penalty for treason on the high sea is death.
Death.
So guess what this motherfucker does?
Goes to Germany.
Does he kill himself again? He pretends to be paralyzed and takes it to the extreme.
Does he really paralyze himself?
No.
Oh.
But for 2 years, he pretends to be paralyzed.
For 2 years?
2 years.
At the age of 40?
Yeah. He pretends to be paralyzed.
How does that work out for him?
So he gets moved to a Bellevue hospital. And on May 25th, 1919, just days before he was to be sent to Britain, Fritz dressed up as a woman and escaped through the bars in his cell that was previously cut.
Oh my God.
And then
God.
He climbed over the barrier wall and he fled to Mexico or Europe. And the New York Post even wrote an article saying it's amazing how a paralyzed man can climb through a window and climb over 7 feet tall barrier walls. And,
how in the world?
Okay. So he escapes. Also,
like, if you pretend to be paralyzed, like hardcore paralyzed, and you're not moving a lot, that's going to be difficult to start moving.
He had to have people move him anywhere he needed to
go. I know you say that I can't analyze this man, but he's kind of smart.
I mean, a lot of people do idolize him, but...
I'm not saying I idolize him, but he's kind of fucking smart if you think about it.
So, 7 years later, in 1926, age 49, he returns to New York as Frank Caverin. He worked for Joseph P. Kennedy, which was...
The brother?
The father of the president. Oh. And films and bookings and makes commercials and that kind of stuff. He moves to Manhattan, where he is well known under his real name. Also, his wife did divorce him.
Oh,
he was frightened at one point.
He was paralyzed.
Yeah, she divorced him.
Wow.
She says, "I'm out of here."
He lied.
You paralyzed.
So in 1930, he moves to the Quigley Publishing Company as a producer for movies, magazines under the name Major Caverin.
Ooh, I like that name.
On May 23rd, age 55, police arrest Fritz. Stop looking at my notes. He was interrogated and beaten, charged with murder on the high sea. Fitz said it was mistaken identity and that he was Major Caverin. So they even brought in Clement Woods, which is the guy that did interviewed Fitz and did a biography on him.
Yeah.
And when he saw Fitz, he goes, "That's not Fitz. That's Major Caverin. I've known him for 5 years." So he goes with it. And so they're like, "Fuck this." And they bring in another dude. They bring in a man who arrested Fritz back in 1917. And so they confirmed his identity, and he was charged with homicide and being an escaped prisoner.
Oh, so he's gonna go to jail for a long time.
This is where things get weird again. Arthur Garfield Hayes, one of the attorneys for the Scopes trial. Do you guys know what the Scopes trials is?
No. Update me.
You really don't?
No.
Oh, okay.
Update me.
It's the human evolution, about teaching human evolution in schools.
Okay, got it.
It's a big thing.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure he was being sarcastic.
No, I was like, for sure lost.
So, he's saying that the murder on the high sea treason was pretty much, statutes of limitations have run out on that. And so they were trying to get him as an escaped prisoner. But technically, when he was paralyzed and waiting to be sent to Britain, he was no longer a U.S. prisoner. He was a Britain prisoner.
So he escaped on U.S. soil, so technically they couldn't hold him.
Right, because he was a British prisoner.
But because he was already in jail, they could hold him.
And since Britain had to let him go because the statute of limitations expired, then they didn't have anything on him. So they let him go. So he gets
almost there.
Oh, my gosh.
Again. And then spring of 1934, Fitz becomes an intelligence officer for the Order of 76, an American pro-Nazi organization in New York City. December 3rd, 1937, Fitz reconnects with a German spy, Ashton.
German spy, Nicholas Ritter.
Ritter recruits several men. One was William Siebold.
Okay.
On February 8th, 1940, Ritter sent Siebold to New York under alias Harry Sawyer to set up shortwave radio transmitting station and to contact Fitz, whose code name was Dunn.
Hey, do you know who else is Ritter? John Ritter. Do you know who John Ritter is?
Get out of here. Get out of here.
Knock on my door. I've been waiting for you.
But Siebold was a double agent for the U.S., and informed on Fitz. They surveillanced him, but Fitz was a good spy.
And so he knew every trick in the book.
Well, obviously.
And so he even walked up to one of the FBIs that was following him and demanded him stop tracking him. And then he also ends up becoming friends with one of the FBI agents and doesn't know that he's an FBI agent. And then on June 28th, 1941, at the age 64, after being withheld... Oh, not withheld. I can't remember hearing. After being watched for 2 years, Fitz and 32 German spies were arrested with the charges of relaying secret information on U.S. weaponry? Yes. And shipping movements to Germany. And the U.S. has not even gotten involved in the war yet. So...
This guy is amazing.
Yeah. On January 2nd, 1942, less than a month after Germany declares war. So then they do declare war. Fitz and 32 members were sentenced to serve a total, like altogether, 300 years in prison.
Oh, my God.
And this is still to the day the largest espionage ring case in the U.S. history. And it was a death blow to German intelligence efforts in the U.S.
So each person was given 300 years?
No, all together added up 300.
I was going to say, that's probably the most somebody's
ever. So at the age of 64, Fitz got 18 years.
At the age of 64.
Yeah. So does he die in prison?
He doesn't escape this time. In 1945, he was transferred to the Medical Center for Federal Prisoners. In 1954, after serving 14 years, he was released because of bad health. His last lecture was in 1954 at the Adventurers Club of New York, titled My Life in and Out of Prison. He died May 24th, 1956, at the age 78 in New York. He had a stroke.
Everyone that knew him
and talks about him says that he was full of shit half the time, and you never knew what was true and what wasn't true, but that he was a very charismatic man, and you always felt sympathy for him. Even the FBI agent that was friends with him was like, yeah, I kind of felt bad having to arrest him, but he was spying on us for Germany.
So it's kind of like that old man kind of thing like my granddaddy does. Did you know my granddaddy had it with Daniel Boone?
Oh, he also liked to say that he was born into this world hearing gunfire and on the run, which is not true.
I was born clean, came out creeping.
He had over 42 aliases. Some of the things he did has been confirmed, but not all of them. But there is a political campaign of him and a political cartoon of him and Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Teddy Roosevelt is wanting to go hunting, and Fitz is there with a pointer pointing at all the animals they see in Africa.
Oh, my God.
So he did hunt big game, though. He did. Anytime he was captured, he would write letters complaining about the treatment and all that kind of stuff.
My back's hurting.
And his picking of names was horrible. Fredericks.
That's terrible.
That was one of his favorite ones to use. Fredericks.
Because they're probably like, whose mama named them that?
Yeah, Fredericks. But yeah, that's the story of Fitz Duquesne.
Is that his real name?
Yeah, Fredericks Duquesne.
Fredericks Duquesne.
Yes. All right. So, he lived quite the life.
We'll post him on our Instagram because he's not what you think he looks like. Believe me.
He was a very charming, charismatic, good-looking person.
A little disappointed at first when you see him, though. Because you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking this big, hunky man.
I'm thinking after you see him, he definitely looks
and
like
when he was on trial for spying on the U.S., he said, I never meant to betray the U.S., but I hated Britain so much that Germany was going to help me destroy Britain. So that's why he was doing everything, because he still had that hatred for Britain. And
he should have stayed in South Africa.
He wanted to take Britain down.
What is it the king says in Hamilton? He will be back. He was back. They try to get him back anyway.
Yeah, he never made it back to Britain, but the U.S. got him.
Should have just been eating those.
After everything he did, he only got 18 years. What'd you say?
He should have just stayed in South Africa eating those hippos.
God, could you imagine, having to go to New Orleans during Mardi Gras and you get canceled because there's a hippo loose?
Oh, my gosh.
They're very territorial.
They're crazy.
That would have been a nightmare.
Like, more people die from hippos than shark attacks. I'm just saying. Right. I mean, don't quote me on that.
I'm pretty sure.
I feel like that's pretty true.
No, I'm pretty sure.
I feel like
they,
I heard that before.
They were going to spend $250,000 to bring hippos in. And that was back in the early 1900s. I don't know how much that is now. It's a lot more now.
That's crazy.
But to bring freaking hippos, to the U.S. so we could eat them. You could have a hippo sandwich.
Ew.
I don't know. I feel like that's true. More people die from hippo attacks than shark attacks.
That's true.
It's true. Yes. I thought I heard that somewhere.
3,000 people are killed each year in Africa from hippos.
Boom.
They're very territorial.
Yeah, they're freaking crazy, man.
And this says only about 1,000 people were killed this is 2016, last year from shark attacks.
See? I know my stuff sometimes.
Don't go near the hippo.
No, listen, I'd rather take my chances with a hippo because people don't know what's in that ocean. That shit scares me.
Yeah, but you know how fast the hippo can run?
Yeah, true.
First off, my ass ain't ever going to go to Africa because my ass don't get on planes. Their mouths are big.
Their mouths are big, man. A hippo's mouth?
Uh-huh. They did a thing where they did hippos against alligators or crocodiles, and the hippo won.
Well, yeah.
Hippo beat that shit out of
there's it. Like, do you know there's leopards that literally leap into the water and, like, launch on? No, it's a jaguar. Jaguars literally eat alligators. Like, I've seen
it. But they will go near a hippo.
Jump into like, the water.
But you know what eats hippos? Black panthers. Boom. There
and
it
pull
is.
It up a tree. Pull it up a tree.
Oh,
Mitch Duquesne, you were something. I just can't get over the fact he was sitting in jail right
now. Is this a movie?
Oh, they did several movies, but none of them were before the 1940s, so I didn't think anybody would be interested in watching them.
We need somebody to make this a movie.
There's also a lot of books about him.
M. Night Shyamalan. Can you make this a movie?
No. Get out of here. You did great with Split, but you're ruining Avatar.
I love Split. He did ruin
The Last
Avatar.
Airbender. But listen, Split was really good.
We talk. Avatar
The
sucked.
Last Airbender.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a live action movie.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen this.
And movie. They call Aang Ong.
It's bad.
It's Ong.
The whole series. It's Aang.
David.
I haven't seen this.
All right. We're getting off topic. But yeah, so our 13th episode.
On Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th.
Our little German spy, saboteur, Black Panther.
Ashton is signing out. Thanks
for
having me. Oh, yeah.
Let us know how you liked Ash. Maybe we'll have her again.
You should fix my pants.
Yes, I can sew them.
Yes. All right. Have a good night.
Enjoy your Friday 13th. Don't forget our Instagram.
Oh, yeah, we have that.
Our Instagram or Facebook.
Shout out to our IG.
Email.
Yeah, and our email. Send me an email, people.
What is it? What is your
Our email is heistandslice@gmail.com. Our
Instagram at heistandslicepodcast. Podcast.
Instagram.
Don't forget to add that.
And then Facebook is just heistandslice. Same with spelt here.
Yes.
Noise. Signing out.
Bye.
Good night.
Mexican food.